This call is being recorded by the meeting organizer. By staying on the call, you are giving your consent to being recorded.
All right, Kathy, go ahead and take over.
Hi, I'm Kathleen Clendenning. I am the supervising attorney here in Palm Beach County. And today we have the head of the juvenile division over from the PD's office, Megan. And she is going to present, I've sent out the PowerPoints, delinquency. We did a quick presentation at the bench bar that we do down here in Palm Beach County a couple years ago, and my attorney found it very useful because a lot of us have not delved into the criminal side, and I also thought this would be a good time to go over some of this, especially for y'all who are considering becoming certified, so you might be able to get some of those juvenile questions answered on the certification. So hold your questions to the end, and she's going to start with the PowerPoint, and we'll be happy to answer anything you have. So, Megan?
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, everyone. As Kathleen said, my name is Megan Eaton. I am the chief of the Juvenile Division for the Public Defender's Office here in the 15th Circuit. I was a juvenile attorney for many years back and then did serious crimes and was county resource director, and so I've been the chief of the Juvenile Division since January. So I've had a bit of a crash course myself. The PowerPoint that was sent to you is actually pretty comprehensive. I did not put it together, but I'm using it because it did a very good job of going through most of the delinquency matters. I would encourage you to talk to the Public Defender's Office in your circuit and the Department of Juvenile Justice in your circuit, because the PowerPoint is Palm Beach County specific. And each circuit does things a little bit differently, particularly in the options they offer for diversion and how they handle their alternative to secure detention. So just note that as you're going through PowerPoint, that is something that is Palm Beach County specific, and you do need to find out how your circuit handles those matters. So starting with the PowerPoint, I like to use the fairy tale Hansel and Gretel when I'm talking to children about crimes and teaching them what a crime is and how to recognize something and realize maybe before they do something that it might not be a good idea. And so that's kind of how I'm going to go through the presentation today to make it a little bit more interesting than the bare bones of the PowerPoint. So if you go to the second slide, it shows the delinquency timeline. So if Hansel and Gretel go to the witch's house and they trespass on the property and they start snacking down on the witch's house, which would be criminal mischief, and then they go inside the house and Hansel batters the poor old witch, who is more than likely over 65 and could be charged with battery on an elderly person. If the police came along at that point, Hansel and Gretel would get an intro into the juvenile justice system. Gretel is usually charged with misdemeanors. When she gets with the police officer, would likely, in our county, be diverted into a diversion program, depending on what her prior history is like. In our county, there are several diversion programs, and most counties have the juvenile civil citation program, and the decision is primarily made by the officer and the agency that does the arresting. So if the officer and the agency who are doing the arrest of Gretel decide they want to give her a chance, then they can divert her into their own civil citation program. If she goes to the Department of Juvenile Justice and a referral is made to the Juvenile Assessment Center, then they can divert her at that point as well and recommend diversion and divert her into different diversion programs. We have several. We have family violence. We have our youth court program. We have what's called JDAP, which is another juvenile diversion program. So they would have that option as well. If Gretel is not taken to the Juvenile Assessment Center and the officer just takes down the information and then releases her to her dad, then that probable cause affidavit is mailed to the state attorney's office, and the state attorney can make the decision to divert her at that point. So there are many places where a child who has not had any criminal history or any other interaction with Department of Juvenile Justice would be able to participate in a diversion program. The one thing to note about diversion programs is for the juvenile civil citation program, the child is required to admit guilt, and that is without counsel. So they are required to make an admission of guilt in order to participate in that civil citation program. in our county, any other diversions that are offered to the child, they are also required to admit guilt. So if you have a child on the dependency side who is facing the decision whether or not to accept a diversion program, that is something that they need to consider, whether or not they want to admit guilt. Not every county and circuit requires that, but Palm Beach County does. So again, that's one thing you'd want to make sure that you know. If you have a dependent child who is looking at the option of diversion. For Hansel, given that he'd probably be arrested for a felony, diversion is not likely. I think there's only one agency in our county who allows diversion for felony. So more than likely, Hansel would have been taken into custody, and he'd be taken to the Juvenile Assessment Center. At that point, the Juvenile Assessment Center would put together his score sheet, his DRE, on his risk assessment instrument, and they would determine based on the number of points in his criminal history and his background and what he was currently arrested for, whether or not he scored to be in secure detention, whether he scored to be at home detention, or whether he could be released outright to a parent. If you flip to the next page, a child who is arrested has to have a detention hearing within 24 hours. That's for any child who is placed on home detention or is in secure detention. So even kids who are sent on home detention and given back to their parents have to come the next day for detention hearings so that a judge can review their risk assessment instrument and determine whether or not they're correctly on home detention or should be taken off home detention or should be taken back into custody. And they can also determine whether or not there's probable cause to even hold them on home detention. So that is something that happens at the detention hearing. The secure detention and home detention are all based, like I said, on a risk assessment that Department of Juvenile Justice puts together. If the child scores 7 to 12 points, then they would qualify for home detention. If they score above that, they would automatically qualify for secure detention. If they're on secure detention or home detention, they are held on secure home detention for a maximum of 21 days. And a lot of attorneys who have handled criminal law before, most of us on the adult side, we're all concerned about speedy trial. Speedy trial is important when it comes to juvenile matters, but that's not usually the determining factor in how fast the case goes. In our circuit, the most important factor is the 21 days. If you have a child who is on secure detention or home detention, the last thing you want is for them to be held in that status for longer than 21 days. If the state is able to get their case together in 21 days, you can have a full juvenile trial within 21 days. And that includes felonies, serious crimes, misdemeanors, the whole nine yards. Because in our county, the state attorneys do not want the children to be released. They don't want them out of secure detention. They don't want them off home detention. So the judges will try and make that happen. If an attorney indicates that they are not able to put together their case and try a case within that 21 days, then the judge can have a hearing to determine whether good cause is present to hold the child in secure detention past the 21 days so that the attorney can continue preparing their case. And will then have to have a review hearing every 72 hours to determine whether good cause remains. Usually, by the time we're getting to that point, the state attorneys have realized they can't get their case together either, and so they usually come to our attorneys and ask for either a resolution of the case, or they recommend doing what's called a waiver of the 21 days so that the child can be released on the electronic monitor or onto home detention. With a waiver of the 21 days, the problem there is that if a child's on home detention, and the waiver of 21 days happens, then that child can be on home detention for months. And, of course, there are concerns with being on home detention because what home detention means is the child goes to school and they come home and they don't go anywhere else. And the only way that they can leave their house is if they're accompanied by their parent. And if they are caught outside the house or a probation officer shows up at the house and they're not present after school, then the probation officer issues what's called a pickup order, the juvenile version of a warrant, and they claim a violation of home detention. If the child skips school, that's also a violation of home detention, if the child decides not to go to school and it's unexcused, that's a violation of home detention. If the child is caught out of the house, after hours, after school, any time without a parent, that's a violation of home detention. And what happens with the violation of home detention is the child is taken back into custody. They have a detention hearing within 24 hours. And the courts treat that as a contempt proceeding because the child violated a court order by being out of school or out at home when they should have been in school or in home. The court can hold the child for up to 5 days for each violation of home detention. And if it's a second violation, that increases. If it's a third violation, it increases even more. So a child can be held for a third violation up to 15 days in secure detention as a punishment for contempt. And that is one of the biggest problems we have with keeping children on home detention longer. While none of us want to have kids in secure detention, we also don't want them to be on home detention for months while the attorneys are preparing their case, because that just gives the probation officers the chance to rack up violations of home detention. And then the child goes back into secure for longer and longer periods of time. So that is one of the biggest problems we have with home detention. Not to mention the fact that kids get really bored when they're at home. And as most of you on the dependency side know, especially when you have parents who have some issues and children who have their own issues, when you put them into a situation where they're locked in a house together, that's also a prescription for domestic violence issues. And some other issues and conflict with parents and can lead to dependency problems. So that is, you know, one of the, I think, unintended consequences of home detention. Now, I don't think most parents want their kids home all the time, that it's sometimes a good idea to have a little bit of relief there. The alternative to secure detention is a push that has been happening through the Juvenile Detention Alternative Initiative through the Annie E. Casey Foundation. It's a nationwide foundation, and they have been trying to change statutes to get kids out of jail, which is excellent. It just depends on what that alternative is. So one of the alternatives to secure detention that exists here in Palm Beach County is an agency actually called ATSD. It's run through Goodwill, and they have officers who will actually go and meet with the kids, take them from school at the end of the day and take them home, arrange activities for them so that they have a very active schedule, and then bring them back home and then check on them throughout the night and then take them to school the next morning if they need transportation and then do it all over again. And they do that day in and day out. This ATSD program through Goodwill has actually been very successful, and we've had kids who wanted to stay on the program longer and have actually had fewer violations because they have this one-on-one contact with a live person who is seen as a mentor. The unfortunate downfall with ATSD is it depends, with the Goodwill program, it depends a lot on the people you've hired to have interactions with these kids. And we lost, we had one of our ATSD officers, his name is Perry Munnings, he was an excellent officer, had been doing it for many, many years. He retired in January, and Goodwill lost some of their funding, so they weren't able to immediately replace them. So then we had problems with one ATSD mentor, basically, having to cover all of the children who were on ATSD for all of Palm Beach County. And for those who aren't aware of how big Palm Beach County is, it can take a good hour and a half to drive from the north county to south of the county and a good hour and a half to drive from east to west. So we have a very large county, and that's a lot of area for one person to have to cover. So they're trying to get their staff level back up. But that is a good program that Goodwill has. They do not take children who have gun charges, who have serious violent charges, or who have sex offenses. So we are also limited at the kinds of offenses they will accept into their program. The other option that our county has is the electronic monitor. We have two versions. We have the version that's run by the Department of Juvenile Justice, and then we have the version that's run by our Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office. The version that's run by the Department of Juvenile Justice is an ankle monitor, like most electronic monitors are nowadays. The children are responsible to keep it charged, so they're given two batteries, and they're told to have one charging at all times, and then switch it out at the end of the day when they come home from school, and then switch it out again and charge it while they're sleeping. And I know as an adult I would have a lot of problems following that very strict schedule, let alone a kid who has a lot of other things going on in their head. So we end up having a lot of violations of the electronic monitor because children are forgetting to charge the battery, or they're only half charging it, and then they go out all day, and you know, it just becomes a problem there. There is nobody monitoring the EM. So what happens is 2 weeks after a child's put on the EM, their juvenile probation officer happens to pull up the website to see where they've been, and they see that this child was out of the house without permission a week and a half ago. And then they see that the child had a low battery alert on their EM 2 days ago. And then they see that the electronic monitor has not been charged properly, or that the electronic monitor has died because of low battery. And that happened yesterday. So what they then do is they collect all of this data and they put it into a violation of electronic monitor, and they issue a pickup order for that kid to be taken into custody for violations of the EM contract. And again, that's treated like a contempt order. So then the child is facing that same 5, 10, 15 days for each subsequent violation. The problem with the EM, every violation is 5 days. So if you have a kid who was outside of the house without permission, they were caught outside of their area without permission, they were, their battery was low, and they had a low alert without charging it, and then the EM died, that's 4 violations. Everyone can be sentenced up to 5 days in secure detention. So in one pickup order, you have a kid who's facing 20 days in secure detention because of a violation of the electronic monitor. Now, usually our state attorneys will come up with an offer and the kid will accept it because it's less than those 20 days. But that just puts them in a really bad position where they're facing all of this time for something stupid, like not having charged their ankle monitor, or for, you know, being outside without permission. And the area of zone that they're allowed to be in is the walls of their house. They're not allowed to be outside of that. And so that's considered a violation. The other option that we have in Palm Beach County is the electronic monitor that's run through the Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office. That electronic monitor is a GPS tracker, and it's run through the phone line. So not only does the family have to have an actual phone line, which is hard to find nowadays, it has to be through AT&T, and it can't have any frills on it. So no call waiting, no long distance, no nothing. It has to be just basic local phone line. And a lot of families end up having to put in their own phone line because they can't use the existing one that they have. AT&T says it's not compatible. And then the child is put on this PBSO electronic monitor, and they actually have an officer, PBSO deputy, who monitors the EM and watches it. And the minute they see that EM go out of the designated area, the officer goes out and arrests the child. The child is then taken into secure detention and held there because that's a violation of their contract. And it's seen not as an alternative necessarily to secure detention, but a gift. That they had a gift to get out of secure detention, and they chose to not take that gift seriously. And so then they're taken back into custody and they're held there until the judge decides otherwise. So we have a lot of issues with collateral consequences when it comes to alternatives to secure detention in our county, and I know there have been similar problems around the state of Florida. So that is something to consider if you know that if you're representing someone from the dependency side who has issues or who is on an ankle monitor or who is on an electronic monitor or who is on home detention, that is something to be aware of. Is that it's not simply an easy matter of, oh, you know, they're on the ankle monitor, so it's okay, they can go wherever they want. No, and it can actually have some significant consequences for them later on down the line. Once the 21 days is waived, if they waive the 21 days to be released on the electronic monitor, they really don't get it back. So if they violate the electronic monitor or the judge decides that they need to go back into secure detention, then they're held in secure detention until their case resolves. We don't have the ability to re-demand the 21 days. The 21 days is a statutory construct. It's not something that's required by the Constitution as the speedy trial deadline is. And so that's not necessarily something that we have the ability to go back and say, oops, you know, we didn't mean it. We want to have it back. So that is something that the delinquency attorneys have to take very seriously when they're considering whether or not to waive 21 so that they can get a child out of secure detention. Let's see. I kind of went through most of what the detention status was. I dealt with the time frames, and I dealt with the continuance for cause on a motion. So we should be up to, and I dealt with the sanctions for violating detention release. Look at that. Look at all the stuff I've already done. So if you go to the slide for time frames on other matters, the speedy trial rule in juvenile is 90 days, and that's regardless whether it's a misdemeanor or a felony. So that's one of the good things about juvenile is that we have that 90-day rule for all felonies as well. Most, like I said, most cases in our county are really dependent on the 21 days, so it's rare for us to even have speedy trial addressed in our courtroom. But when it is, it's very uncommon for my attorneys to waive speedy trial because they can get anything, almost anything ready in 21 days. Why not in 90? So it doesn't, it's not something that we generally waive in juvenile unless there's a really good reason for it. The discovery rules for juvenile are that it has to be provided within 5 days of service of the notice of discovery. In Palm Beach County, we have an agreement with the state attorney's office that once we are appointed on the case, then that serves as our notice of discovery, and the state attorney is required to give us the discovery within 5 days of the public defender being appointed on the case. And the 5 days is important because, again, we're dealing with the shortened 21-day period, the 21-day deadline. The 5-day, the problem we have with discovery typically in our county is what constitutes discovery from the state attorney's perspective and what constitutes discovery from ours. They like to say, oh, well, I gave you the probable cause affidavit and the witness list. That's your discovery. Well, okay, but you didn't give us the statements that are mentioned in the discovery. You didn't give us the officer who is, you know, the person who actually arrested my client. And so we end up having a lot of, we go back and do a lot of motions to compel after the fact so that we can make the court aware of the multiple things that the state attorney's office and their police agencies have not provided to us. Generally, though, my attorneys can get most of what they need by the time they have to do a 21-day trial. And if they're asking for a continuance based on the state not providing them discovery, then we argue in the if the judge is having a hearing to determine whether or not good cause has been shown for extending the 21-day detention rule, then we have a pretty good argument for the fact that the state is the one who created the delay, and therefore the trial that's not good cause and the child should not be held past the 21 days. So discovery and knowing the deadlines in that can be really important as far as how it affects on the 21 days and what we can do with that. The child, once the case actually goes to trial, it's just like a normal hearing in front of a judge. We do not have jury trials, unfortunately, in juvenile. We have to deal with the juvenile judge. They're all judge hearings, which is what you guys have to deal with on the dependency side, too. The trial is remarkably shorter without a jury because we don't have to worry about jury selection and doing things outside the presence of the jury. So typically a juvenile trial in our circuit takes a couple hours, maybe a maximum of four just if it's a complex case. So it can be done in half a day or less. So you'll have a lot of judges who will do 3, 4, 5 trials at a time. If a judge determines that the child is not guilty, then obviously if the client was in custody, in secure detention or in home detention, they're released. So we don't have that anymore. If the judge finds the child guilty, then there's two things that can happen. The judge can go ahead and sentence the child right then and there and place the child on probation. In juvenile, the one of the only options for a child who is found guilty or pleads guilty is to be placed on probation. If it's a withhold of delinquency, then the child can be placed on probation up to the age of 19, even if it's for a misdemeanor. So if you have a child who's 15 years old and pleads to possession of marijuana and gets a withhold because they don't want to have a delinquent adjudication of delinquency on their record, then they could be on probation until the age of 19, depending on what the requirements were of their probation. It would be up to a judge, after they completed the conditions of probation, to determine whether or not they successfully completed probation and whether or not to terminate their probation. And if a judge decided they didn't want to terminate the probation, there's not much that can be done at that point. So that is one of the consequences of a child going on probation in juvenile. If a child is adjudicated delinquent and placed on probation, they can only be on probation for the maximum amount of time under the law. So if it's possession of marijuana, they can only be on probation for a year, and then they have to be taken off. If it's for a felony, it can be 5 years or more. And obviously, we don't want the children to be adjudicated delinquent, particularly a felony. That can have significant consequences later on down the line. So that's if they're found guilty. The judge can sentence them right then and place them on probation. If the judge wants to consider other options, which would be a commitment program through the Department of Juvenile Justice, or wants a recommendation from the Department of Juvenile Justice on whether or not the child should be committed and what level they should be committed to, then the judge will order what's called a PDR in staffing. It's a predisposition report that's created by the Department of Juvenile Justice, and a staffing. And a staffing is when the Department of Juvenile Justice puts that together, and if commitment is being considered, they have a commitment manager who is the one setting up the meeting. He invites the child's guardian, the public defender, the state attorney, the probation officer, and anyone else that might have some information to provide to the Department of Juvenile Justice in making their recommendation. We've had teachers come before for our clients. We've had social workers. We've had teachers. We've had guardian ad litem come to the staffing. We've had a lot of people who will come to the staffing, and they'll give information, and everyone sits down and talks about the issues that child has and whether or not those issues can be addressed in the community, or if those issues have not been addressed in the community or cannot be addressed in the community, whether or not they can be addressed in a commitment program by the Department of Juvenile Justice. The commitment programs, don't let the name fool you, it's a nice name for a kid jail. The commitment programs are divided by level. There is non-residential, which is usually community-based, so the child will go to school, and then they'll go to the program in the evening. Non-secure residential is where the child is taken out of their home. The Department of Juvenile Justice will look at the child's needs as they determine them to be, and they will try and find a placement at a residential facility for that child that addresses those needs. So if the department feels like they have a substance abuse issue, they have behavioral issues, they have intermittent issues, they try and match them with a program that will meet those needs, and even if the program is on the other side of the state. So the child is taken away, they're taken out of their home, out of their community, and they're placed into this non-secure residential facility. Most of the non-secure residential facilities do not have any fences or barbed wire. They are locked rooms. So it's like some of the ones I've been to, they have cabins, and so the kids will go, they'll have like a cabin for their dorm where all of the kids, you know, the girls sleep together or the boys sleep together, and then they'll have a building or a cabin where they have their therapy, a building or cabin where they have school, and a building or cabin where they have their dining room. And all of the buildings are locked unless the children are there and it's being in use. And at night, when the children are in the program, when they're in their dorms, they're locked into the dorm. So it is not secure in the sense that it's not surrounded by barbed wire, but it's definitely not a place that would be easy to run away from if the child was deciding they wanted to run. Usually these places are also secure in geography. A lot of these non-secure residential facilities are in the middle of the state or in the middle of woods or backed up to some kind of nature preserve. So it also makes it very difficult for the child to run from the facility because they don't really have any place to run to, or they don't necessarily want to run through like a gator-infested marsh. So that is one of the placements that a child can be sent to. The other higher option would be a high-risk residential facility. These are much more like prisons or jails where they're surrounded by barbed wire, You have to be buzzed in. All of the doors are locked. The children usually cannot go outside. Most of the children who are in high-risk residential facilities cannot leave the placement, even for field trips designed by the high-risk residential facility without permission from the judge, the state attorney, and or consultation with the alleged victim on their case. High-risk residential is usually reserved for children who have committed felonies, more serious crimes, and most times when our Department of Juvenile Justice recommends high risk, it's either because the crime is so serious that they've been accused of or they've been found guilty of, or because they have already been to a non-secure placement and they came back and committed new crimes in the community. High-risk residential is typically outside of the community. We have one boys facility here in Palm Beach County, but most of our clients do not go there. They get shipped to other facilities. And then the most serious commitment program is maximum risk residential, and that is a prison. It's a child's prison. And they're taken in there, they're monitored, they're walked around, they're not allowed to be in there alone. And it is basically putting them in prison until they finish the program. We do separate here in the state of Florida. They are separated by gender, so we do not have any co-ed commitment programs in Florida. There is one max risk girls facility, but it's also max and high risk, and it's just north of here. I believe it's in Martin County. And then there are specific devoted max risk facilities for boys. So we have more boys facilities than we do have girls facilities. If a child is staffed and the Department of Juvenile Justice has determined they are going to recommend commitment, then the juvenile term for a sentencing is a disposition. So everybody shows up at the disposition. The Department of Juvenile Justice presents their predisposition report and their staffing recommendation to the judge. The state attorney gives their recommendation to the judge, and the public defender gives our recommendation. And then the judge makes the decision. If the Department of Juvenile Justice recommends probation and the judge decides to commit, the judge has to make very specific findings in a written order as to why they're not complying with the recommendation from the Department of Juvenile Justice. It's the same if the Department of Juvenile Justice is recommending commitment and the judge decides to place the child on probation. The judge has to be very specific in the disposition hearing as to what they're recommending, as to what they're ordering the child to do, and they have to determine at the disposition whether or not to place the child on post-commitment probation. If the judge does not make that decision at the time of the disposition, or says, well, I'll consider it later on down the line, that's not something they're allowed to do, and it's actually a violation of double jeopardy to sentence a child to post-commitment probation after they've already completed their program. That's something that the state attorneys in our circuit have actually agreed to, that they agree that post-commitment probation has to be ordered at the disposition. What that means basically is a child can complete their entire program and get released, and then they have to still be supervised and on probation until probation decides they've completed everything and successfully terminated. So again, you can have a child on probation for quite a long time after they've already completed this residential commitment program. If a child is disposed and the judge determines that they need to be committed, the judge then if the child was out on home detention or out on release to their parents, the judge can have the child taken into secure detention at that point and held for 5 days. And in that 5 days, the Department of Juvenile Justice is supposed to find a placement for them and have them placed within that 5-day time period. It is highly unlikely that that happens. We don't see that very often in our county, because it's difficult to find to match them up with the appropriate placement, and also most of the residential facilities are very busy and they're very full. So then at that point, the Department of Juvenile Justice's lawyer can file and ask that the child be held an additional 10 days for them to find a placement. But in the motion and at the hearing, the lawyer has to make a statement that the Department of Juvenile Justice believes the child can be placed within that 10 days. If they don't make that assertion in their motion or they do not have someone testify to that at the hearing, then the judge should not continue the detention an additional 10 days. If the judge does continue detention for that additional 10 days, then the department has that 15 days to place the child. And if they do not place the child within that 15 days for a non-secure residential facility, then the child should be released. If the child is committed to high risk or max risk, they're held in secure detention until they can find placement. That becomes really problematic, particularly for our clients who have any kind of mental health issues, learning disabilities, if they have been sentenced to a max risk for sex offenses. It can be very difficult to find placement for those children within any kind of reasonable time period. And in fact, we've had children that have been held for months waiting in secure detention at the juvenile detention center without services because they're trying to match them with a facility that is going to meet the services and needs that they have. So that can become very problematic as well because then these children are just kind of waiting for months and there's not much that can be done from the public defender standpoint other than making motions and getting the judge upset that it's taking so long. But under the statute, they're allowed to be held. If a child is on a judge releases a child on home detention while they're waiting for their program, and they violate home detention while awaiting commitment, then it's also considered a contempt proceeding. They can be taken back into custody, and they can be held for 5 days for each violation of home detention. Usually in our county, the judges, if they cannot be placed within that 15 days or it's been an excessive amount of time, the judges can release the children to the electronic monitor. But if a child violates the electronic monitor while they've been waiting for commitment, it is unlikely they will be released again. The judges usually will hold them insecure until a placement is found. So that tends to become an issue if the kid wants to run away or they don't want to face the commitment that they've been disposed towards. If a child completes their program, usually most judges will be informed by the Department of Juvenile Justice, and then the judge will have what's called a pre-release hearing where all the parties come back together. The program will give a summary of how the child has done, and the judge will decide whether or not the child can be released from that program and what the conditions of post-commitment probation are going to be. The judge has the ability with the recommendation from the Department of Juvenile Justice to directly discharge the child if they've been really successful in their program. And Department of Juvenile Justice can make that recommendation. But most often, DJJ recommends post-commitment probation so that the child can continue getting services in the community and can be monitored to make sure they're not going to reoffend before they successfully terminate them. I think that's everything that's in the PowerPoint. And if anybody has any questions, I'll take them now.
Hi, this is Natalie. I'm just from the 11th Circuit. I just have a question about the criminal sanctions for violating either do not run order or electronic monitoring. Does that affect the child's ability to find jobs in the future? That's what we heard down here in the 11th from a public defender, that criminal sanctions are the only things that cannot be expunged. Is that true?
Well, what will happen is on the child's criminal record, it'll show that they were adjudicated of contempt, and so that would be something that could be discoverable on a criminal record check. So it is something, it's another thing to consider in a child, with a child who is worried about their criminal record and what that ramifications can be in the future. The other issue that we've been dealing with here in Palm Beach County is children who we have a concern regarding their competency. So if we don't believe a child is competent and they're pending competency or they've been determined to be incompetent, we've been fighting with the judges on whether or not they can even be on home detention or on an electronic monitor because they do not have the ability to understand the contract and whether or not they can actually be violated for violating the home detention or electronic monitor contract if they have pending competency concerns. And so we've had children actually held in secure detention because we would not enter a plea on a violation of the home detention or a violation of the EM contract.
And that's if you're still even pending the competency review?
That's correct.
Hi, this is Eva Sugg with the 19th Circuit. We just recently were discussing with the State Attorney's Office as well as the Public Defenders for our youth what type of programs they have in the state. And I have a child who needs a program, but he has mental health needs, and I was told there are no programs like a wilderness program, a program that would be conducive to, he really needs a lot of love, honestly, for this teen. And she said there's one that really gives them a lot of the love, a lot of the compassion. However, they don't address mental health needs, and they don't take any child with mental health needs. Do you know of any facility like that?
So this is my question. I'm going to turn back to you. Do you mean a post-disposition program where it's run by Department of Juvenile Justice, or are you looking for a placement for your child that would be independent from the Department of Juvenile Justice?
A juvenile justice program. Significant DJJ history, and he's pre-dispo right now, but with his VOPs that have been filed, most likely there's going to be a fight to have him committed.
Okay. So since you are predisposition, the one placement that I would encourage you to look at would be Sandy Pines. It's at the north end of our county, and it's a lockdown facility that takes children with significant mental health issues. It does take a while to get the application process put through, but they're usually very good about taking our clients and clients from other circuits. As far as a post-disposition placement, I know we have a child who's been waiting for 65 days for a placement that will address his mental health needs. And he's been in secure detention that entire time. And Department of Juvenile Justice is telling us that they are still waiting for a bed to become available at the one facility that might be able to take him. So that is definitely a failing that we have in our state.
What is the name of the one facility?
I don't know it off the top of my head, but I can definitely get you that information. If you get your information to Kathleen, she'll forward it to me.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Hi, this is Natalie again from the 11th Circuit. Are you seeing a lack of cooperation from your state attorneys on venturing into pleas with your clients?
What we're seeing is they're very entrenched in what they want and what they believe is necessary to punish these children. There is a distinct lack of trickle-down from the head of the juvenile division, who is in all of the meetings where we all talk about evidence-based research and really trying to find alternatives to detention and really putting in place these research-based models that show that children do better when they're in school, when they're in the community, when they're, you know, actually participating in pro-social activities with positive peer reinforcement, when they're interacting with mentors. That information is being delivered to the person who's in charge of the state attorney's office, but it's not being forwarded down to their state attorneys. And so the state attorneys who are on the line in the courtrooms every day giving plea offers, the thing they're most concerned about is getting their quote-unquote pound of flesh. So based on this kid's history, they want this many number of community service hours, and they want them to be on the electronic monitor as a condition of probation for this many days because, oh my goodness, they violated home detention once. Or because their parent is concerned about them being out past curfew. They want a curfew of 5 p.m. They want the child to not work. They want the child to do all of this other stuff, not because it has been determined that's what's best for the child or will meet the child's needs, but because that particular state attorney wants that on the plea sheet. And that's the problem that we're having with our state attorney, is that there's very little that they're offering in their plea offers that actually is
indicative or reflective of what the Department of Juvenile Justice is trying to do statewide and what the research is showing us statewide will actually lower the risk to reoffend.
Thank you. I don't know if it makes you feel better, but that's the same thing that's happening in the 11th Circuit.
Yeah.
From one specific courtroom that I'm seeing.
Mm-hmm. And really, it's the only way that it's going to stop, and what we've been trying to do in our courtrooms, is we've been going directly to the judges and asking them to do plea offers to circumvent the state attorneys, or we've been trying to point out to the chief of the juvenile division for the state attorney's office these particular state attorneys and what they're requiring and how that differs from the information and the research that has been shown. Sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. But going to the judges sometimes will work.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, anybody out there have any other questions for Megan?
Well, if you guys think of anything that you want to ask later on, like I said, Kathleen has my email address and my contact information, so you can just